Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we're doing a full year review. We're welcoming back California Athletic Trainers Association President Kai Kugler to the podcast. How are you doing, Kai?
Doing well. Thank you. Eli, yourself?
We're doing pretty good over here. It's a beautiful day out. Today's nice, isn't it?
Yes.
It looks like a good one. We had a really exciting year in review, and we really wanted to sit down, talk with you from the athletic training perspective, our profession. We had a good year. We really did, for the first time legislatively in a long time. And we wanted to come back because we interviewed you last year about this time, right before the big CATA conference in a few weeks, and just see comparisons, look back, what went right, what went wrong. So maybe let's start with something simple. A couple of the bills we sponsored this year. If you want to start talking about either one, I won't poke which one first. All on you, sir.
Go
right
ahead and give me the number and the title of the bill, and I'll respond to it.
Sounds good. Well, let's start with AB 1653, which really talked about safety, emergency action plan, and heat illness.
Well, I think what's important to know historically, we've looked at our legislative efforts always through the CATA lens as something that was benefiting athletic trainers. And about, 3 to 5 years ago, we shifted gears to not only want to make sure that we do what's right for athletic trainers in the state of California, but we wanted to take an active role in legislation and healthcare issues for the entire state that we could co-support, co-sponsor, and or go ahead and show our opposition too, because there's been some bills that we've opposed because language has not included athletic trainers when it came to concussion acts and things like that. So we've tried to work with authors and that kind of thing. So this shift in CATA and California Athletic Trainers being part of the healthcare advocacy group and being a player in the healthcare system was very important to us. I think this particular law that has gone into effect is evident of that. And it does obviously serves the public protection principles that the CATA has very, very well. And the fact that EAPs are such an important, vital part of our athletic training education and the need to have one in place when a true catastrophic traumatic injury or illness comes up to be put into play and save someone's life is evident by our support of that particular law.
I know as far as that law was concerned, it had a huge effect on most schools. And again, I'm a little biased to the high school setting, been there for 28 years. It really stepped up the game at a lot of places and caught some people off guard, but really took some important stances. The EAPs, having to have an emergency action plan, which for you and me is second nature.
Right.
It's a no-brainer. What are you going to do? We have to do emergency action plans for everything, fire, shooter response at schools, earthquake scenarios. But an emergency action plan at a sporting event just is so necessary as far as we're concerned. But so many people didn't see it.
And we found that to be true when we started looking at schools that had athletic trainers versus schools that did not have a certified athletic trainer on staff. Very, very few, unfortunately, there were a few, but very few that had an ATC on staff was impacted by this particular legislation. Those that did not have had to learn something, and also showed and gave us an opportunity to educate the public more and educators in the school districts, and with CIF support in particular as well, gave us an opportunity to really beat the wagon and beat the drum when it came to why athletic trainers are so important at the secondary school level. It gave us an opportunity to educate people on how to develop those plans and how important they were. So that was a good opportunity for us to step in and affect some change.
Completely agree. I know, as you said, one of our colleagues and comrade in arms, so to speak, over at CIF Southern Section, Michael West, was a key in making sure we had some good information at the secondary school level, some formats, some templates to hand out to those schools that just were a little less fortunate, didn't have an athletic trainer, but were looking for a way to understand EAPs and what they needed to do. I can't tell you how many times my phone rang or my colleagues in my office, their phone rang, asking for advice and how to understand the template. And people really reached out trying to understand. And then they learned, hey,
right,
that's what an athletic trainer does. How could we get one here?
Right. Well, you know, it's an interesting situation that we value and we see that goes on in athletics. I correlate what Mike West does for the CIF and the benefit he's going to bring to the overall profession and the athletic trainers and the public and the secondary school athletes in our state, just to be amazingly positive in the future. I look back at when there was a few individuals that left their athletic trainer head positions and became associate athletic directors or athletic directors within four-year schools, or, you know, whether it's D1 to D3. And they go, why do they want to go in there? And I says, what impact are they going to have? Well, that impact has turned out to be terribly, terribly positive, because now they look at that individual and they know the importance. They know this, the staff ratios are out of balance. And those are things that have changed. So as we branch into other avenues of administration as athletic trainers, like Mike has, like I did when I was at Cal Poly Pomona for a while, and even when it comes to the educational side, we're going to see greater and greater impact and greater change from a positive standpoint as we move forward. And so I see that as a benefit that we have when it comes to our colleagues and our peers branching out into these other positions.
Completely agree. And I'll give a shout out to one of our colleagues who's made it into administration at the school level as a principal, Michael Ventura. I remember when he was a colleague as a clinical athletic trainer at Palm Springs High School, and now I believe he's the principal. Last time I talked, it's been a little while. He's made a huge impact understanding what we do at the administrative level.
Well, look what you guys have done out in your area when it comes to your collaboration and your partnerships with local high schools, along with the local hospital organizations and healthcare teams that are in that area. Same thing with Chris and Farrell down at the LA Unified School District, and see how their roles as they've gone into other positions have only enhanced athletic training services and protection of our public when it comes to their involvement in those school districts. So it's a process, but it's going to continue to improve because those jobs are going to be becoming more and more available. Because one thing that I have always truly believed, and I've seen this with my own career, is that athletic trainers have transitional skills to go in a variety of different ways. The fact that we have developed a communication style, perhaps, and an ability to accommodate people of a diverse nature and have to work in either a relaxed setting or a very traumatic, catastrophic, stressful setting, and can do so both ways and at all times and change hats from moment to moment, like you said. You can be sitting at a desk doing paperwork, writing up injury reports, and all of a sudden you're running out to the gymnasium to take care of a dislocated ankle on a kinesiology student that's been in a basketball class, and you have to make that change immediately. All those things are we have the ability to go into other avenues and transition into other avenues and other roles. And I see that as a huge positive, and that's what's occurring for sure. I mean, that's how we've got into other allied health settings when it comes to work settings, employment settings, but that's what's going to continue to promote our profession and get our profession over the hump and become a bigger player in the healthcare management system.
Our versatility, so true. You see it all the time with quality healthcare professionals. They're not just solo artists. They are able to, as you said, change hats and take care of whatever the situation is in front of them.
Yeah, I agree 100%. What was the second bill?
Second bill, let's go on to Bill 1467, which was the bill that would put AEDs within a certain perimeter of any athletic event. Now, I know this didn't go exactly how we wanted as far as the time frame, but the fact we got it there and we got it across the line, I know CIF was a huge partner on this one at the state and local level, was huge to get there. So maybe let's talk about that one.
You know, I look at that particular bill very synonymously with our AB 796, our own title protection bill. We got something on the books, both of us, for title protection for athletic trainers' names and titles and being BOC certified, etc. And that particular bill also got AEDs recognized and in place. Were the parameters of AEDs the correct quantity for that school district that they were looking at? Probably not, but it's a start. It's a start. So at some point in time, you go back and say, you know what? I got one AED and I got it on the corner of a backdrop for softball and baseball and soccer practice fields. Well, maybe that one's enough because all of them are in close proximity to a thing. But what happens when, you know, you're at Cal Poly Pomona, where I was, and soccer was in the West 40 and baseball was in the Southeast 40 and, softball, when they had softball, was up in the North 40. You needed three AEDs, you know, to be readily available. So we had to make those adjustments and changes. And that's what they're going to find with this bill. It's a great start. Great start. It's been, you know, it's going to help significantly. It'll save people's lives. And there's just going to have to be some adjustments and some amendments to it on how many we need. And I know it's so interesting. We talk about the finances, and I understand we're in a society, we're in a lifestyle that everything deals with finances and with budgets and things like that. And we're not going to ever get out of that, but I always kind of laugh and say, what, you know, an AED costs what, $800 to $1,000? Is that a small enough price to save someone's life? It is to me.
Oh, yes, completely.
You know, I've had a stent put in my heart so I can be around a little bit longer. We have an AED here at the house that I bought personally. And, you know, both my kids, my wife, and everybody that surrounds me knows CPR, knows how to distribute AEDs and work with them. $1,000 was something that I couldn't really afford at the time, but my life and my family was more important than that $1,000.
Couldn't agree with you more on that one. You know, we take it from different perspective. We go back several decades. People felt the same way about fire extinguishers. You know, it was a too much of expense. You wouldn't expect to have one all over the place, let alone in your house. And now they're just common denominators at any house, any location. Yeah, they're in every classroom.
Yeah, you get fined if they're not updated every year.
Exactly. So, you know, I always think of that and how we evolve from not having fire extinguishers everywhere to, well, yeah, you can't open a door without seeing one. And I really hope there comes a day where it's the same thing with an AED. They're everywhere. We have a known colleague, Victoria Yost, out in Reedley High School. Hey, Victoria, how you doing? The day they received their AED in April, it was used and saved somebody's life in the middle of a game. It was a was not a student athlete, but immediate impact.
She's going to receive a CATA Lifesaver Award this year as well.
Oh, that'll be fantastic. I
Well,
can't wait to see that. I'll be there with all smiles to watch Victoria. She's a fantastic person, so that's nice to hear. You hear these opportunities for making a difference, and just the simple legislation of getting the acknowledgement of an AED and having it near an athletic site. It's not for the kids. It's not for the student athletes. 90% of the time, it's going to be a fan. It's going to be an official. It's going to be that referee, that announcer. That's who it's going to be for, the grandparent in the stands watching.
And that AED is just part of the EAP, part of that emergency action plan. They go hand in hand. So it's going to happen. I think one of the worst attributes that probably you have, probably the worst one that I have, is we're not very patient. And as a society, we're not always real patient. But I think as I've grown a little bit older, I've developed some patience. I see patients developing in you all the time now.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll have to tell my wife.
It's going to happen, hopefully sooner than later, but it's going to happen. And we're doing well. Just like we started with legislative efforts all the way back to 1986 when we had the first licensure bill on Duke Majan's desk, and that got vetoed. And that was a licensure effort. And we've had three or four failures with registration, licensure, even title protection, where we thought we had somebody that was going to obviously be a big supporter, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger, or somebody that comes from a fitness world and would think that he would understand the need for public protection and the need for healthcare issues and that kind of stuff, healthcare preparedness. So we've had setbacks, but we finally got something on the books. It's taken a while, but I think it's going to set the stage for us to have one of the best registration and licensure efforts across the country because we've learned from other states where they've rewritten theirs. So we have a better template to go by. And even though we've had that, I'm always thinking the glass is half full, not half empty. And I think it's more than half full now. And I think we're going to move forward in the next year to 5 years very quickly when it comes to our legislative efforts. And I think we'll become a bigger and better recognized healthcare player in the state of California as well, due to the strategy that we adopted 3 or 4 years ago. I'm really excited of where we got this year. We got something on the books. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Is it going to cut down on posers? Well, we hope so. We see more, three or four or five complaints a month. We take the time to respond to them. And even though our law doesn't have any real enforcement to it, it's just fantastic that we go and educate and talk to a risk manager at a school district or a superintendent or a principal or an athletic director. We can state that this is law now, that you can't have that individual pose as an athletic trainer because it's against the law. And they say, well, if it's against the law, and yes, you're putting yourself out in liability if you're doing so. So we get an opportunity now, even better, to educate them on how to get that athletic trainer, how to fund that athletic training position. Interesting enough, I just got a email from our national office not more than 30 minutes ago about a world international, national and international world-class over 50 paddleball player, pickleball player that lives up at Napa and has some arthritic knees, and their orthopedic surgeon has recommended that they get with an athletic trainer for rehab and for a use because of the sports nature of that. And it's obviously an orthopedic individual who understands what we do and appreciates what we do. So that's another opportunity that we're seeing that comes out of this title protection. So now I can turn to my colleagues, my peers up around NAPA and say, who can help this young lady out? This is a feather in your cap. This is how you build your grassroots efforts. And this is how you build an individual that's going to support you and go to the wall for you with legislators in that area, that when it comes time for licensure votes and that sort of thing, you have it in place. So I'm excited about the things that have transpired. I'm so excited about our CHAMP program, our colleagues helping and making sure that we all members prevail when it comes to financial situations. We've had some that have been affected by the fires that haven't necessarily lost their house, haven't necessarily lost a lot of possessions, but financially, because they've had to move out and they had to be away from their house, or they're going to have some smoke damage that they're going to have to clean out and replace or whatever, that they're now going to struggle still remain an NATA member. And so we're going to help them out with their NATA due structures. So we've got the CHAMP program that's doing that. We got EDI that we know is being looked at differently by the present political situations in our country, but that's not going to affect the CATA, because unless we hear from our membership that they don't want EDI and accessibility issues for all people, and we want to represent that sort of commitment to diversity and inclusion and equity and accessibility, because that's who we are, that's who we treat, those are our patients, those are our clients, those are our student athletes, you know, that's only going to get enhanced. So I'm so proud of the people that I've had the pleasure of being on the managing board with for the last 4 years, and what we've accomplished with the CHAMP program, our EDI commitment. We have a new committee on professional and ethical behavior, which is something we need, that's going to handle these title protection issues until we get over the hump and get a registration and a licensure enforcement arm that will be developed along with these bills that are coming up. We have the new committee on professional advancements. So we're representing all health settings that athletic trainers are employed in. And those are exciting things. We see all those. California is leading the way in those. Certainly there's some other states, but just think about what California has when it comes to those, what we used to call the non-traditional. Now they're traditional settings. They're just the traditional settings along with our athletic settings. That's something that the public has begun to recognize, you know, being in dance, being in the arts, being in Amazon, being in PepsiCo, helping out firefighters, being down with the Wounded Warrior Program at the U.S. Marine Camp. All these things, all these different areas that we now help people in and make cost-effective change to their healthcare plans, their workman's comp, et cetera, beyond what we do for our traditional settings, our typical athletes when it comes to professional, et cetera. All those things are a result of things that we have kind of tried to envision moving forward. And I think we're doing the managing board, and it doesn't have anything to do with me because I have bright people around me that suggest things and I'm smart enough to listen. And I try to make sure that they get all the credit for it. And I think they deserve the credit because these are good people and these are going to be our leaders. You know, I'm at the tail end of my career, but I think we're doing some neat things and have done some neat things. I got 2 years left. We'll see how that transpires. I'm excited. I'm excited about our new symposium coming up here at the end of February, 1st of March. We're actually having the governmental affairs people come out from the NATA to do another legislative boot camp, because we do have some new managing board members that have never really participated in a lot of legislative affairs. So we're going to get a little training, get a little background, a little education in it. But we're also going to spend a high majority of our time on developing strategies on where we're going with this legislative cycle, which is, you know, in the first year, the very first stages of its first year, for the next 2 years, and where we'll be maybe in a legislative cycle that's in year three or four from now. So we're developing strategies on how we get that registration, how we get that licensure, how we get that enforcement, how we make a plan to develop with BOC certified athletic trainers who are non-NATA members. How can we get them to support the CATA and be involved in our licensure efforts and get the benefits, but also get them back in the fold as NATA memberships, because that's what the CATA is. It's an NATA arm of the CATA is an NATA arm. And we're just an offshoot of the NATA. So we got some questions out there that we're going to have to answer, but I'm excited about that potential. I'm excited about the fact that, you know, we got 25 vendors at our convention. Started 15 years ago, we had none. We had over 70 people, maybe attend. Now we shut the doors at 300 very easily. We have 25 vendors. We have you and others that want to do podcasts and want to sponsor things. And it's become a financial situation where it pretty much funds itself. And that's a good thing, because we are saving membership dollars, and that gives us an opportunity to do more good things with money and grants and research with the EDI group, with our student group, with the CHAMP program. And I'm sure that there's going to be a couple of new ones come out, even out of this particular meeting this year. So I'm real thankful, very excited, and to be honest with you, very proud of the people that have been on the managing board that have done good things last 4 years. And certainly it was very easy for me, because I stepped in and followed Jason Bennett and Mike West and everybody else who was a great CATA leader. So I've reaped the benefits of getting us over the hump a little bit, maybe, with our legislative efforts, but they set the background. They were the groundwork for it. And so I'm just blessed to be in a position and at a time that a lot of good things are happening.
Well, I got to tell you, one thing that I think started to change when you jumped in was that mindset of not looking at legislation from the athletic trainer standpoint, but as you said, from what can we do for others? And when we went from, and I hear it all the time at work, don't think of I, think of we, or think of the big picture. Once we did that, boy, what a change legislatively. That was probably just a key concept that changed with you and your managing board. But I got to tell you,
that came out of the first governmental affairs boot camp that we had with the NATA. And, you know, I'd love to tell you that that was my idea. That was a Nick Harvey idea. That was a governmental affairs chair, and he still is. That was a strategy that our new lobbyists put in place. Now, did I put maybe a little pressure on maybe going with a new lobbyist? Yeah, because I thought it was time for a change and some innovative ideas. And the group that we have now is bright and young and energetic. I did put a lot of pressure on them, and they came through for us with AB 796. So, but once again, it shows that it's not me. It's a group of people, and it's a group of individuals. And if you trust your colleagues, they have better expertise than I do or anyone does. We're better collectively than we ever are as an individual. And so I appreciate the fact that I think that you're recognizing the collective nature of what we've been as an organization for the last couple of years, maybe a small bit more than what we've been in the past. So we've really tried to work on being transparent and include our members and include communications. And it's an uphill battle, because, you know, not everybody wants to get involved, like we were talking earlier. Some people just want to go with the flow.
Which you and I both will never understand. That's not in our nature, but I get it. Some people just want to duck down and do what they do, and God bless them. Hope they can make a living and do well, but that's not in my nature, I know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, another thing that we instituted, I think, 7 years ago, that legislative funding for NATA members as part of our due structure. So we've accumulated pretty fair amount of money. And even though PAC funds and licensure boards and things like that have changed by law, that the money now for its original purpose is not permitted to be used for that, there are some other avenues that it can be used for. And we're going to have to work on how to use that $750,000 to $1 million to benefit the members that put that money in and benefit our profession and benefit how we manage athletic training profession and advance it in the state of California, and how we reward those people that have been loyal to us and have worked hard for California to get us into this position. So, you know, we still have uphill battles. We still got some challenges, and that's what makes it fun. If you didn't have challenges, geez, I'd have retired. And, you know, and I'm close to it anyway. I've already retired from working, so I'm ready to do kind of wrap up and retire as well from my volunteer service commitment, both at the NATA level and at the CATA level. I guess even at the District A level too. So ready to move on. It's a young person's game.
One thing's for sure, you've put some good people around you, which is always a sign of a good leader. You don't just find somebody that's going to say yes, yes, yes. You find people that are going to say no, but here's why. And here's what I'd recommend. And bringing a managing board, and as you said, the younger generation of athletic trainers on board and getting them involved brings new life, brings new blood, and helps push us to become a better organization. And I think you've been very successful at that. So thank you for what you've done so far. And you're not quite done yet. So keep pushing it.
Two more years.
Two more. Well, hopefully they'll be just as eventful in a positive way.
Hopefully.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. We kind of bounced around a little bit there. We got to several of the laws. We went from 1467, which was the AED law, to we started talking about our title protection, our big victory, our big feather in the cap. For the first time in California history, we got something. And that was AB 796. The moment I got the text that it was signed, I couldn't believe it. I'll be honest, I questioned if it would ever happen, because like so many of us, we've been on the desk waiting for the signature and it just never happened. So sometimes you want to think the glass is half full, but you never know. So that was just such a wonderful feeling for those of us who've been around a little while and been working on it. Thank you, and to the entire group that worked on that one.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, it was long, long overdue. For those who doubted that we would ever do it, oftentimes thought that we weren't working harder than anybody else in the country to advance the profession and do legislation. I think this last effort really gave us an opportunity to prove to the rest of the country and to our peers and to our national organization, our district organization, that what a lot of them knew, but not all of them knew, that we were working hard for the last 25, 30, 40 years on this. And California is an interesting state, one of the few states that got a two-year legislative docket in front of it. Fifth largest economy in the world from a financial standpoint, but then we run a deficit in the billions of dollars 1 year, and then we'll have a big-time surplus 2 years or 3 years later of $1 billion, and we don't set anything aside for that rainy day that eventually is going to come back. And so, you know, our grassroots efforts and our lobbying firm and our, you know, we took what we could get. This was the best we were going to get out of this legislative two-year cycle, and that was title protection. And we got the majority of the opposition as non-factors that we've had in the past for this effort, and which I see as a very, very good thing, because it sets the stage for us to continue to work with them and gain their support as we move forward. But you have to have that first step before you can ask something else out of somebody that needs to be on board as well with you. I think we did well. It was a good effort, and We were blessed, and I was as happy as anyone. People ask me, why do you do volunteer work and service work? And it's for moments like this. I mean, for me, I moved to California in 1986 to be the assistant athletic trainer at Cal State Fullerton from New Mexico State. And within the first week or 10 days, they had a supposedly a CATA Region 6 meeting, which was going to be a celebration for Duke Majan signing that initial licensure effort in 1986. So we went down to San Diego. Come to find out, he vetoes it, turned definitely from a celebration into something that was not celebratory. So for me personally, something I've been fighting for since 1986. And so for it to finally go through and get the governor's signature, and we did things just a little bit different. Now, like you said, you recognize that we developed a strategy. We put ourselves out in a place. We took a year or two off and didn't talk about us at all. We talked about healthcare. Nick did a fantastic job. He followed Mike Chizar's footsteps. A little bit different personality, a little different approaches, but basically the same commitment, the same hard worker that Mike had been for all those years. And you know, every failure is a stepping stone to the success. We owe a debt of tremendous gratitude to anybody that's been involved in this for all these years because they have set the stage and done something that we've gotten over the hump finally. And we'll see how, you know, once again, now I turn back to the half full, the true optimist. I think we are going to move quicker in this next round of athletic training regulation in our state.
I love that sound.
Yeah, with registration and licensure, I think we'll move quicker than we have in this last 40 years. That's our goal, and we'll see how it transpires. And I could be wrong, I could be right, but I guarantee you that the same effort that we had to put forth for the last 40 years to finally get this on the dock and to hear that yay and hear that I'm signing it into law, and that's a neat thing. It's a law, you know, so. Title protection doesn't have a lot of enforcement opportunities to it, but it's a law. So when you say that you are using an athletic trainer who's not an athletic trainer, who's not educated, who's not certified, and who's not qualified to do that job, it's a law saying that you can't do that. So you have to make changes. So every school, every person that's an opposer has to make a change. We don't have a lot of teeth to it to back it up and to fine them or to put them in jail or anything like that. But I'll tell you what, school districts and risk managers really like knowing that they have a situation that could put them in jeopardy. And they're pretty responsive then to finding out ways to get educated and learn more about an athletic trainer and learn more about how to fund one and how to protect it. And then they see the benefit of it when it comes to the financial side of it. It's a win-win situation, even without a lot of enforcement. And it's only going to get better once we get the enforcement aspect to registration and licensure. I'm hoping that we move forward quickly on it.
Well, I do too, 'cause just like you, I've been waiting a long time. Not
Yep.
quite as long. You got me by a couple years.
Yep.
But it's been a wonderful experience watching it happen after all those times seeing it not happen. Like you said, I was ecstatic. I couldn't text enough friends quick enough and colleagues. It was just a very joyful day. The fact that everybody worked so hard for so long to make something as what seems simple to us as title protection happen just makes me ecstatic thinking what we may be able to do in the upcoming years.
Now, I think this bill set the stage for us to be in a great position for it to move forward because we only qualified the bill on two things, that you were CATE accredited or whatever past accrediting or educational program that you came from or type that and whatever happens in the future from an educational standpoint that's dictated by athletic training accreditations and standards of education and competencies and those sorts of things, that's a good thing. That's the number one criteria for it. And the other one is the only way that you can be an athletic trainer in California is if you're BOC certified. And
Amen.
so those two things are pretty dang simple and can't be challenged. And that takes care of, in my opinion, takes care of almost every issue when it comes to somebody saying, is that individual an athletic trainer, or why is Amazon hiring an athletic trainer? They're not working with an athlete. No, they're working with an athlete that works, and a physically active person that works for Amazon.
My favorite quote so far, and one of my colleagues said, I've got an industrial athlete working for me, and I'm helping him or her. An industrial athlete. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And, you know, a recreational athlete for Disneyland, that's a dancer. Or
oh,
a
yes. Oh,
you
yes.
Know? And all these things. And so I think we did a, once again, I'm proud to be part of it. We did a good job in making sure we kept it simple and kept it wide open for the future, because I don't see our education changing dramatically, or the way we look at it when it comes to education and accreditation. And I don't look at the BOC being changing when it comes to certification. That's why they're separate entities now. That's why they're strategic partners at the national level. You know, they're no longer part of the NATA, the volunteer organization. They're their own entity, and they're strategic partners, all aligning to try to move the athletic training profession forward. And I think that's what we did well. So I see we put ourselves into a good position, I think, by keeping it simple. And it was such a, it was a fun, because there was times when people would look at the first language that was written, and or what somebody else had written or wanted to. And we knew that it was going to change, but it hadn't changed yet. And you can't justify telling somebody it's not going to look like the way it does until it looks differently. And then all of a sudden, people that were calling me up or calling Nick up and saying, you know, this is going to be terrible. Firefighters are not covered on this. We're going to have to call your author or call our legislators and voice opposition on this. This is our own peers, our own colleagues.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
This is going to change. The end thing, at the end of the day, this will change, and it's going to cover everybody. And it has. And it did. And it is.
It nailed it. It really did.
Yeah.
We've really hit most of the legislative events of the last year, minus the one aspect, which we can talk about briefly and then look at the future a little bit, which you already have. We had the bill on heat-related illness, which was brought in as part of AB 1653, if I remember correctly. And it really dealt with creating, as you said, a safer environment for, in this case, it was youth sports, that heat safety and air quality, just trying to keep a person, a young person, a youth in athletics safer. I think it was a great bill. I think it really made a huge difference right when we started figuring out all the wrinkles that needed to be ironed out. But oh my God, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's interesting. I answered another question for another blog of a friend of yours earlier this morning. You're my second one today. He talked to me about how do you entice somebody to want to come to California to work? And obviously the first thing that came out of my mouth was, who wouldn't want to come to California to work when it comes to our weather?
Amen.
You know, amen. But in turn, we still got Central Valley that has tremendous heat.
Amen.
We still got El Central and that part of our state that is tremendous heat and air quality issues. We had air quality issues for our athletes and our high schools and the general public with our wildfires. We got a totally different climate up at Humboldt in Northern California than we do down in San Diego.
Let's go Lumberjacks.
Yeah.
You shout out my alma mater. I got to say that.
Okay, well, I guess what do they go by now? Cal State Polytechnic at Humboldt?
Cal Poly Humboldt. Yeah, that I'm still not used to that, but you know, I'll get there.
Yeah. So we have some climate considerations, some acclimation situations and considerations that we need to address. We always think about it's, you know, heat problems only being in the South or only being in the Southwest or whatever. They're back in Nebraska when it's 90 degrees and 90% humidity. That's a heat-related issue. We see air quality issues when it comes to Oregon or we go to Phoenix and the air quality is terrible, or we see the fires in Oregon that go on that becomes an air quality issue. We see it in California. What occurred for me from 1986 till now, the air quality in California is just mind-boggling and so good compared to what it was back when I was a clinical athletic trainer at Cal Poly Pomona and Cal State Fullerton, and having kids and having student athletes have events and practice and that sort of thing.
I presume you're talking back on the smog alert days. I remember those. I remember being a high school athlete coming here to play against the school I work at and not being able to see the hills and the mountains that are literally within a mile.
Yeah, I couldn't see Big Bear from Cal Poly Pomona half the time in September and October. And but we had soccer games going
I'll never
on.
forget that. Throw in the fires. There was an AQI one day because we have Perry Weather. Shout out to them, nod to them. We had an AQI on our campus one day in the middle of the fires of over 600. I think it was 681 or something. Now, granted, nobody in their right mind was going to play, but you get down to 200, 250, and a coach thinks, okay, well, we're out of the fire danger and we're allowed to come back to campus. Why can't we practice? So you need that law in effect because you can say, look, the law states you can't. It's not just falling on us as clinicians, as athletic trainers, although I have no problem telling the coach no. But now
But
you got a law.
some young athletic trainers do because they haven't gone through the battles yet.
Yeah, I remember those days being, well, that was a long time ago, but being young and being a little, I wouldn't say impish, but a little concerned about how it was going to be received.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking now at chlorine levels in our pools. We're looking at the temperature of the water in pools and when is it safe and not safe. We're going to see more and more issues with frostbite and things of that nature across the country. So any bill that's going to deal with climatation and climate considerations and acclimation to those different changing factors is going to be a healthy thing for healthcare. And so that's why we stuck our CATA stamp alongside the original authors and supported it. And there's other bills that we didn't support because, we didn't feel that they were valuable to the what we thought were the main concerns for public health care and public safety and didn't represent our profession and us as healthcare providers. So we didn't step alongside those individuals in those bills. But the one that you brought up, we did. And it was a good thing. Once again, good leadership by Nick and him looking at bills and our lobbyists, because we took his recommendation almost every bill. Well, we did take his recommendation on everything, but we all reviewed it. But he brought things to the table and brought the recommendations and the reasoning and the consideration to start the conversations that we needed to have.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nick Harvey, athletic trainer. We appreciate everything you've done this last few years in really pushing our organization and our profession in California. So, little nod, little tip of the hat, and thank you over
Yeah,
there
Nick's
at
going to get the FWATIS Special Service Award for California at the District 8 convention in April. And he's also going to get one with us at the CATA. And I haven't heard yet, but he's up for a National State Legislative Service Award in the Governmental Affairs Division of the NATA that he's up for as well for leadership and excellence.
It sounds like it's well deserved.
Yep, he has done a fantastic job.
Looking forward, thinking about the future. I know it goes in certain years and steps in California. Anything in particular that we're hoping, other than registration and licensure, of course, to help push along to make things safe in our community, or is that still under investigation?
I think it's under investigation. I mean, we're actually going to, right before our meeting, our managing board is going to meet, like I think I mentioned earlier, but if I didn't, we're going to meet with the Governmental Affairs Division of the NATA and we're going to strategize. Certainly, we're going to talk about legislative action plans and current issues and those sorts of things on how we look at new members and new people that need to be aware of things and help them get over the hump and get them on board with the rest of us. But the primary goal of that, and I was the one that really pushed to bring the NATA out and for us to have these sessions, was to develop the strategy for the next 1 to 5 years. What that might be, I don't know for sure. I don't know what our timelines are going to be. Are we going to jump like certain legislators in Sacramento right now have recommended to us that we go through the steps of title protection to registration to licensure, because that's what's happened to a lot of other healthcare organizations? You know, I say on that just because somebody else had to go through that. I kind of want to jump from title protection to licensure, but that may not be a reality. Just like licensure and registration weren't a reality for AB 796 in this last legislative session. We needed to win. We needed to get something on the books. We needed to become a bigger player and get our own bill and our own language that we could rely upon. And we needed to have that step in place so we could take more steps. I don't know exactly what will come out of Anaheim when we have our symposium, we have our boot camp and our legislative think tank, for lack of a better term. But it's going to be part of what's going to be driven by our conversations, which I really have asked all of our members to chime in and do. That'll be part of our business meeting. And our membership, our managing board members, and our leadership team have been asked to go out and get feelings and get suggestions and be able to give the pulse of our association and our members to us, so we know how to respond and how to move it forward. It's not about us. It's not about that group of 15 or 25 people. It's about 2,500 people, right? And 3,000 people that are in the CATA when you start counting in the students and other levels of membership besides just ATCs. I mean, that's why everybody seems to think that we need to make a statement about DEI and how it's changing, being influenced at the national level right now. The NATA is looking at that, making a response. I don't think we need to make a response, because we've checked the pulse of our members and they're happy with it and they want it. And we're going to keep it. And there's no way they can affect us. They're not going to take anything away from us for us having that and letting people know that we have a commitment to that. To me, that just will support us when it comes back and turns around again. And eventually it's going to turn around again. I can guarantee that.
It will.
It'll change back to a positive, to where people are just looked at as people. And we just, we support one another and we find ways to help one another, whether it's through DEIA efforts or whatever else. We get back to being human and having humanity. We're going to get there at some point in time. And so that's what I mean by taking the pulse of our members. I'm not worried about DEI for our state association, the CATA. Had a question the other day by one of our leadership members. Do we need to take something off of our webpage? And I said, why? I said, our members are comfortable with it. Until we hear otherwise, I said, I'm going to follow their directive. I said, personally, it's my directive as well. So it's a pretty easy battle for me to go into if I have to battle somebody. So far, I haven't had to battle anybody, so it's not a worry to me at all. So
I'd like to think that that battle in our state is pretty safe.
Yeah.
Knock on wood, of course.
Yeah, I would hope so.
So one of the big takeaways of the last few minutes is, ladies and gentlemen and everybody else that wants to have a say in the direction of our profession, it's the time. Yeah. You should be going to our event. And I say R because I'm a member of the CATA. I am vested in the CATA. I spend my money and I'm going. So, you know, we'll see you late in the evening on Friday and Saturday out there in the lobby talking, maybe with a cold beverage in hand. Yeah. But talking
beverage of choice is never frowned upon.
Exactly. Those are my favorite times, because that's when you get to talk, you get to connect again, and we can really discuss what the issues are or our state association. So if you want a voice, you should be at that event at the end of February, beginning of March. And let's talk. Let's get it done. Let's see which direction we want the CATA to go.
You know, I'm digging over here for a piece of paper that Nick prepared for me, which are going to be our talking points at our preliminary leadership team meeting and strategic think tank, etc. And I'm trying to see if I can just share a couple ideas that we've put down on paper to let you know what, as a member, if you do show up, you're going to be asked these questions about where you can help us with and what to let us know. You know, we're going to try to look at the process of how a bill continues to go through, tips and tricks for those who have not had many conversations with legislator, conversation ideas, goals, targets, what do we focus on in the future, what are important topics need for stakeholders, think outside the box, how is Dr. Weber changing from an assembly person now to a senator from the San Diego area, impact her as our main legislator and advocate for athletic training regulations. How does that impact us? She has a new staff, new chief of staff. So obviously there's going to be some sort of educational time that has to be invested in that. What are we going to do maybe in this first year, this legislative year now, and we're not probably going to put anything out there or put anything together. We'll wait for that second year and then hit it hard all the second year of this legislative session. How do we still do prep? Who do we visit? Who do we try to get as co-sponsors? Who do we get to support? How do we try to partnership with the Eric Paredes Foundation out of San Diego and other
Fantastic organization down there.
work with the Governor's Advisory Council on Physical fitness. You know, there's the Aspen Institute of Project Play Summit that we're looking at attending and speaking at. We're going to put a lot of things in paper and try to do some drafts of some legislature and take what that's why the NATA is out because they'll be able to bring us the best templates and the best practice that now is available from everybody, all 50 states. Which is so nice to say
Wow, we can say
instead of
that.
saying 49,
We
all
could
50
say that
states agree.
now.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
So some of those are things that we want to hear from our members about. We want to hear what you feel. We want to hear whether or not the CHAMP initiative is a good initiative, whether or not our research and grants program for DEI students are a good program. We want to hear how we can maybe have one of your colleagues and your friends who's not a non-NATA member but still BOC, how can we get them back in the fold? How can we work with them and meet their needs? I think we understand the issues of why people have gotten out of the NATA, but I still think there's a lot of things about the NATA that people don't understand and all the benefits that association tries to bring to them. It's the same way for us. What does the CATA do for you? We want to make sure that you have a great understanding of what we try to bring to you. And if there's another need that you have or another need that we haven't foreseen, we need to know about it because it's your organization. So that's kind of what I mean by we want to get the pulse and people, and I appreciate the plug for our symposium. Can get out there and come to the business meeting and speak to us over lunch or over a beverage of choice or just seeing us in the foyer or going through the exhibit hall. 25 exhibitors, that's pretty cool. There's going to be a lot of things that the exhibitors are going to have available to people in a variety of different avenues. It doesn't really matter for the setting so much. So it's exciting times, but that's what we want. We need people to provide us with information.
Well, people, colleagues, friends, let's do that. Let's get out there. See you in coming up soon.
Coming up very, very soon. Coming up
Little
very soon.
too quick. Well,
Yeah.
Kai, I know you are semi-retired. You're keeping busy in so many other ways. We've been going at it for almost an hour. I don't want to take too much of your day. I appreciate you sitting down. It's been a year since we sat down last and talked about this. I hope to be at the symposium talking with you next year, maybe on a stage doing the same thing.
I hope so. One of the things that we're doing is we're opening up podcasts as presenters. So it's an application process for anybody that has a podcast or has a need to do a blog or do a podcast or do a live Zoom call or do a panel discussion. Go through our symposium committee and put down a presentation as a regular topic that we'll be at. I think we have 15 CEUs this year in Anaheim. We have some great topics and a couple of good learning labs that are going on. We got Wilda Bingham,
Yes.
Wilda Jarrett,
Yep.
Wilda Jarrett, one of the first female African American athletic trainers at the NATA level, and one of the top 50 individuals that was recognized by the NATA during their Title IX celebration. We recognized her at the CATA. She'll be our first keynote speaker. It's going to be enlightening because her road has been difficult. She's had trials and tribulations with work and with employment and mental health issues. And I can say all those things because she's going to talk about all those things and how she overcame them, how colleagues have stepped in and supported her, how she's going to give us tips on how to manage that in all of our lives, because we all have challenges in some form or another. I mean, I've had my health challenges this past year. It'll be a good keynote speaker during our lunchtime. And I mean, if nothing else, I've known Wilda for since 1988, I believe.
Oh,
So
wow. Oh, wow.
consider her a dear friend. So if I was not in this position where I got to be at the whole thing or need the all entire CEU package, I would show up just in support of Wilda and hear her talk and hear her story.
I'm definitely
That's
looking
good.
forward to that
Yeah,
myself.
it's going to be a great thing.
Well, thank you for all your time, buddy.
You're
Again,
welcome.
we'll be hoping to see you next year as an official podcast member because, well, we're official CAT members and we're going to do everything we can to support our
Well, I
organization.
appreciate your efforts and I appreciate you bringing information and getting information out to our colleagues and our peers. And hopefully it'll continue to grow and you'll have opportunities to educate the public as well.
That's all we hope for. Educate others about what we do, who we are, and how we take care of them.
Yep.
Yep. So, my friend, you have a great afternoon.
Well,
Stay
you too.
healthy for us, please.
Try my best.
Thanks for
All
being
right.
on the podcast today. Wrap it up, sports medicine and more.
All right. Thanks, Eli. I appreciate it. Say hi to the family.
You too. Bye-bye, Kai. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.